Good morning and welcome to Luckus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Last Wednesday, the Portland City Council unanimously passed a historic ordinance banning new bulk fossil fuel terminals in the city, a bold move that commits the city to transition away from fossil fuels. This victory for climate justice is the result of over 2 years of grassroots organizing, and some of the most stunning voices in the struggle were those of young people whose clarity in the face of the impending climate disaster visibly influenced the powers that be. This morning, we speak with one of these student activists, Ella Schreiner, a freshman at Grant High School, and her former teacher, Jan Zuckerman, who was one of the founders of the Environmental Middle School, which morphed into Sunnyside Environmental School, where Jan taught for a number of years. Jan and Ella, welcome to Luckus Focus.
Hi. Hi, Barbara.
Hi.
Well, I have this very strong memory of meeting at City Council a little over a month ago, where there was they were having the final debate and putting the finishing touches on this long sought after ban on fossil fuel infrastructure in the city of Portland. And the plan that was before the city council was going to allow for a 10% increase in existing storage facilities and a couple other loopholes. I think one of them was going to allow Northwest Natural Gas to be exempt totally from this proposal. And they had heard from a lot of, we'll call them adult activists, about why this was not a good idea. And then the students came up and started speaking. And I watched the city councilors' expressions totally change when they got this image from people who actually are going to be suffering the consequences of bad decisions being made now, as opposed to people my age and even the age of some of the city councilors who probably won't have to endure this. And Ella, you were one of those voices, right?
Yeah.
So I want to know what it was like to be standing in front of your five city council people, and if you noticed a change in their expressions when you started speaking.
Oh, I would say I did, and it's very empowering to be able to make a change like that and see that difference that youth voices can make, and it's just really important that we are the ones speaking too. It's not just the adults.
Well, what are the points that you are making? Because I really got a feeling from listening to everybody in middle school and high school who's testified at all the hearings I've been going to for the last couple of years, that there's a certain urgency that you feel that maybe people who are older than you don't quite feel. And I wonder what that feels like to you to be able to get across to people. We're going to still be alive in 2050. We're going to still be alive, hopefully, in 2070.
Well, that's exactly it. It's just our future. Well, yeah. Most importantly, it's our future because it's our children and anybody that we want to come after us. And we need to be taking the steps that will solve the issue, not ones that are good, but ones that are great.
Well, Jan, I want to bring you into the conversation. And one of the last times I saw you was we're standing out on the street in front of the Army Corps of Engineers building, and you were about to come back and camp out there that night in support of the water protectors of Standing Rock. So you are, in your private life, an activist, obviously. I'm wondering how when you were teaching, how you brought that into the classroom, and when you first started Environmental Middle School many years ago, if you foresaw a time when you'd have students like Ella, you'd be like grooming them to come and testify in front of city council.
Well, you know, I taught for 10 years before I taught at, started the Environmental Middle School with another few folks. And, students are, if you get them connected to what's really going on in the real world, then they want to learn and they're engaged. And it's very easy to just bring that into the curriculum because it's real. It's what's happening. So, when we started the Environmental Middle School, we just knew we needed to connect kids with the natural world. And if we did, they would love the natural world enough to protect it or feel, understand the relationship that they have with it. And I think that's what's missing for a lot of kids now.
Now, did you have any plans when you started the Environmental Middle School that you were actually going to be trying to raise a generation of activists?
Oh yeah,
was that in the work plan?
So I mean, activists, don't we all want? I mean, we all want to be active in our communities. We all want to better our communities. So the idea of being an activist is what we should all be. And so we wanted them to be civic, be engaged civically, and especially around service learning, knowing that especially middle school students or high school students were. In our society, we kind of push them aside and say, oh, those kids, keep them away, or they're troublemakers. To have the opportunities for for leadership and making real important impacts in the community is important, and it's empowering, like Ella said, and also they matter, you know, and so and they can get a lot more done than adults can. Let's just put it that way.
Well, Ella, I'm wondering how you felt about, first of all, when you started out at Sunnyside Middle School or Sunnyside Elementary School, did you start there as in elementary school, or did you come in a little bit later?
I actually came in 7th grade because my brother and sister had gone there, and they had a great experience and just been exposed to all the great things at Sunnyside.
So were there some striking differences when you entered the environmental school that you hadn't experienced in your elementary school?
Definitely. There's much more of a community, I would say, between the middle schoolers because it's mixed classes. So you get to know people older and younger than you and feel leadership or be led by your peers.
That's one of the things that I don't recall. Well, things were a little different when I was in elementary school and middle school, but I don't think of it as like they're really training leadership in terms of social action. Maybe leadership in terms of running the PTA or something like that, which could be social action. And I guess at the Sunnyside Environmental School, probably the PTA is quite involved in this as well.
Yeah, I would say. Would you say, Jan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what did you feel like were your responsibilities when you stepped into the environmental school and you realized what the learning opportunities were? What did you feel like perhaps your civic responsibilities were going to be in return?
Well, it wasn't clear at first, but my family is aware of like climate change, and I've been raised to love nature and stuff. So I learned more about what I had known before, and that's when I saw the level of action that people were taking and realized I could be part of it. So I guess also there are cohorts in 8th grade where all the 8th grade students choose a group that they want to make a change on, like homelessness or climate change. And so I realized that there were big actions that I could be taking in climate change.
Well, I've been curious when I go to the hearings. In fact, at the vote this past Wednesday, I ran into Lincoln High School teacher Tim Swinehart and his whole class. And I asked him, I said, well, because I was curious about whether what they did in class to sort of to support the kind of actions they were doing at city council. And he said, well, I just bring my classroom down here. And that's like part of the classroom activity. So I see that there's this big shift, I think, that's happened where some teachers are including teaching their classes how to testify in front of city councils, in front of various other commissions that are going to be making decisions. Is this a new thing, Jan, or is this something that you've been pulling from years of tradition?
Well, it might be new for some teachers. I mean, I think that teachers that have been activists or concerned about social and environmental justice issues are always integrating this kind of stuff in their classroom and teaching students how to write letters, write letters to the editor, to debate, to speak up. I think getting out of the classroom or seeing that the city as part of your classroom or the forest as part of your classroom is part of, you know, the whole idea of place-based education that, you know, I think we did before we knew it was called place-based education. But it's, you know, engaging, taking the kids out. The classroom is bigger than the building that you're in. So I think at Portland's, it's more accepted maybe in Portland. Or I think as if you're an older teacher, you feel like you can get away with that kind of stuff more than just the newer teachers coming in. But I think the sense of outrage that's happening right now and the concern for the loss of our democracy and everything is going to bring more students and more teachers out.
Well, I think that's what I really want to talk about today, because, I mean, to me, that's really the burning issue. I mean, the electors around the country now, they probably have all voted at this point. We don't know who they voted for, but we can probably assume. And there's a friend described this feeling, this is pallor that's over the world right now as we're focusing on how do we preserve democracy. And I guess, Ella, I just want to get your sense about what you see happening, and do you feel that you are empowered, maybe more than Jen and I feel we are, to really do something?
Yeah, sure. Well, again, I can't say this enough, that it's our future as youth, and Donald Trump could change a lot of things that have happened that are taking steps toward positive change in the past. So we need to keep that momentum and keep the positive change going.
One of the things that was hopeful at the city council hearing, I mean, and it's one of the places where I am heartened by Charlie Hales, when he talks about how the city is committed to holding on to the values that we've been espousing and enacting, and that this ordinance that was passed last Wednesday is actually a strong blow to fossil fuel industry, because it really is creating a chokehold on their dreams of turning the Northwest into an export hub for fossil fuels. So it seems like there's a lot of feeling here in the community that we are going to continue to do what we do. But I want to know, how do we continue to do what we do?
You should talk about the UCAN.
Oh, yeah. So I'm working with some other students to start a UCAN group, which stands for Youth Climate Action Network, with our Children's Trust. And it's we're hoping to have youth action and get youth involved in passing an ordinance that mandates annual reduction in emissions. So I think what's really important right now is local action, like you said, which is just focusing on what we can do, because the nation is going to be very divided. So we need to keep it focused on what we can do and just make sure that we're taking the best action we can.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking this morning with student activist Ella Schreiner and teacher, I guess, she's a supposedly retired teacher, but I understand you're still doing a lot of work.
I think the re is, the tired part is still.
Okay, tired but not retired teacher.
Right.
Jan Zuckerman, who helped start the Environmental Middle School a number of years ago. And we're talking about this wonderful surge of energy from young people who I think are maybe taking a leadership role in trying to save our planet and definitely to try to stave off the worst of climate chaos. Jan, what gave you the idea to even... did you become a teacher before you were an activist, or did you become a teacher out of being an activist?
Well, you know, my mom kind of brought us up to feel very, worried and, concerned about the world, and social justice issues were important to her. So I think I've always been concerned. And then I thought I'd be a teacher, and then I went into the classroom doing some practicums, and I thought, oh, I can't do this. This is horrible. This is so scary. And I took a year off and traveled. And I think traveling helps cement some of that, the social environmental justice stuff that was already part of me. And then going back to teaching, then I could go back to teaching and feel like I could take some of that into the classroom. And I think just you're in the classroom, you're with kids that are smart and keep you honest and want to learn, and there's all this important history, and so it just makes sense. I mean, it just worked. I don't know.
Well, whose idea was it to start going to all these hearings? Was it your idea or the kids' idea?
Do you remember, Ella? I think even the cohort, your cohort, there are just things that are happening in the city, like the Pembina. You know, it's there. There's a call, there's a hearing, and the students are engaged in learning about climate change and learning about what's going on in the city. And so they, you just ask them, do you want to participate in this hearing? And
let's talk a bit about Pembina, because that was, a lot of people say that was kind of really a turning point for the climate movement in Portland, because before that, people were focusing elsewhere. It was coal terminals around the region. It was the mega oil refinery, that's still being planned for Vancouver across the river. Let's just talk a bit about what Pembina was about and how that galvanized such a wide movement in so many young people. Start with you, Ella.
Well, I don't actually know very much about it at the time or even now, but that's when I saw the last year's cohort testifying at the hearings, and I think that would probably be the time that I really got inspired that I could also do something like that.
So Jan, let's do a little bit of background. What is Pembina and what were they trying to do here?
They were wanting to, you could probably
talk about Pembina is, it's in a Canadian fossil fuel company, and they wanted to build a very large, I think the largest in North America, liquid propane terminal here right across from Hayden Island.
Yeah, and the way really I even found out about it is, here I'm meeting with my students. We're starting to look at what are some of the issues. And Jasmine from the Columbia River Keepers connected. I usually reach out to the organizations in the city or, you know, in the region say, hey, what's going on? I'm working with a group of students. Would you come in and talk to them about some of the burning issues right now and teach us? Because I'm learning about them at the same time as the students. So Jasmine Stuckey came in and told us about Pembina, and then Bob Salinger from the Audubon, who was a parent of a student at Sunnyside, came in and talked to us about, you know, the impact on the animals out there at Hayden Island. And we just started putting all the pieces together. And the students were like, yeah, we want to, this is really important. This is really scary. And we need to, you know, we need to testify. We need to take some action. So they decided they wanted to do that. And I think part of that, the whole idea of, you know, is that are we going to have to be battling for each and every one of these, you know,
horrible ideas.
And that's what the fossil fuel resolution was so powerful, because it really just shuts it all down. It's, you know, anyway, so that was, I think, a big learning curve for me, too. I mean, I didn't know about all that stuff, so.
Well, actually, I learned about Pembina. I was on my way into doing the show, and I just happened to be reading the news and saw this thing in the Oregonian about this plant, this terminal was being proposed, and it was upsetting people. And the word had just come out, and I was interviewing Eric DePlace from Sightline, and I said, what do you know about Pembina? And he was, like, scrambling to try to find out, too, because this was one of the concerns that a lot of people had, that nobody knew about
it.
It was all being decided between the city council and the Port of Portland.
And I think that's what was, I think, shocking to the students, is how can that happen? How can the public not know about what's going on? I mean, they're asking the questions, the real questions, and are just, it's like a no-brainer to the students. Like, this is ridiculous. This should not, it shouldn't be this way.
Now, Ella, I was one of the things that really struck me at the city council hearing last month, when all the students, I mean, your cohort, and then all the students from Lincoln and the students from Grant, and they were all getting up and talking about the outrage that they couldn't understand this compromise that the city council was willing to make, that the planning, the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability and their staff report had come up with these compromises that included allowing existing facilities to increase by 10% if they did seismic upgrades, for an example. And the students just kind of laid it out flat, like, there's no argument here. You cannot say that you're stopping fossil fuel development or stopping the encouragement of fossil fuel infrastructure in the city and having all this great climate change action plans and everything if you are allowing a significant increase in existing structure. I'm wondering how you felt as you were giving that testimony. Did you feel like you're talking to a bunch of morons, maybe, or just evil people, or did you feel more compassionate than that?
Well, like I said earlier, I feel that it's really important that right now we aren't compromising and that we're taking the best steps possible and not doing good steps or okay steps, but we need to make sure that there are no loopholes and that this is the time that it really matters what's happening.
So, because I did feel like the city council responded in a way, and I don't think they would have responded to adults this way. And I've seen that at every hearing I've gone to, even the Millennium Coal Terminal. I think there were some young people speaking there, as I recall. Mm-hmm. And again, it's like I feel that the young people are speaking truth to power in a way that adults don't seem to do that. Some adults do. But in general, every young person who stood up to speak at every hearing that I've been at has just been direct. And I'm just wondering, where does that come from in you?
I think it comes from people's hearts, because as youth, we don't have to be there. We have other things we could be doing. And if you're there, it shows that you truly care. Well, it's not for work like adults could be. Like, it's just, it's coming straight from your heart.
Well, speaking of it's not for work, I mean, the only people we see at these hearings that are doing it, who are getting paid to do it, are the ones who are supporting the infrastructure.
Exactly.
But I, you know, I always tell the students, you know, they really have the moral authority to look in a child's eyes and say, oh, we don't care about your future, or we're not going to take the steps. Most people don't want to do that. And I think it causes a shift in, like you were saying, the heart. And I think it, you know, Charlie Hales, I think, really connected with you and some of the other folks from the cohort when you went and testified, and you did it many times. And Ella was invited by the mayor to his, what is it, the speech? The
State of the City.
Yeah. And I think it's because, you know, he, you know, I don't know. I think that the power that students, that youth have, is, it shifts things in a big way.
Because I'm thinking about, I've been to a lot of hearings over my lifetime, and I think that the number of young people speaking out now at hearings, it's a relatively new phenomenon. Maybe it has to do with Sunnyside Environmental School and also some of the stuff, the programs that are going on at some of the high schools. But I feel like I've never seen that the kind of energy that young people bring, and that it's really changed the conversation. Do you feel that, Ella?
Yeah, definitely. I know a lot of my friends are just now getting involved after the election because they're realizing that this is actually happening and this is the time for action. We need to step up. It's not just going to happen on its own.
Don't you think that 21 youth plaintiffs, too?
Yeah,
I mean, getting to
definitely.
Know some of them. And
let's talk a little bit about that, so okay. Our Children's Trust.
Right, the 21 youth plaintiffs that are suing the federal government for the right to a clean atmosphere. These youth they're incredible. And, you know, Ella, you can talk a little bit about what it was like to go and, you know, watch the hearings and participate in that. Maybe you want to share with
them. Well, it's very inspiring, first of all. And also just as a youth, seeing them doing that makes you realize that that could easily be me. Like, those people care, I care, so there's nothing special that makes them more qualified or less qualified. So it's just people that really care and have taken it upon themselves.
So what are they doing exactly?
Well, like Jan said, they're suing the government. And so
it's the federal government.
Federal government, yes. For the right to a clean atmosphere. So they want a law that will lower emissions and or a climate recovery plan. That's what they're looking for. So they're out doing public outreach, I think, and showing up to all the hearings.
I really like what Ella was just saying, that It's not like they're special people. I think that's the power, is to see yourself in, you know, any of us. I mean, we all can do something.
And we all need to.
Yeah, we have to.
Now, where's the status of that lawsuit?
It's going to go to trial.
Yeah.
And so there was a whole struggle first for it to even get standing. Is that true?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there was a hearing. A hearing. And then the fossil fuel companies said that they have no standing. So then they had another hearing as a follow-up, but now they're going to trial.
So this is the trial that's in Eugene. Mm-hmm. And then is there also another one in Seattle, or is that the same?
I think there's separate.
Yeah.
There's some state ones happening.
Yeah, and I think there's some back east as well, mm-hmm. I understand. Mm-hmm. So this is a whole movement.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think is going to happen after January 20th, provided that Trump actually does get inaugurated?
There's going to be an uprising. What do you mean?
Well, I'm just wondering about, in terms of the status of the lawsuit. I mean, you've been up against a relatively, presidential administration that likes to see itself as being climate proactive.
Well, I mean, Obama could settle the case, right? He could settle it, and then there would be a climate recovery, or, you know.
And you don't think that that could be undone by a Trump administration?
I don't know how exactly all the legalities, but I think Obama could do something now. It's just going to be Giuliani versus, you know, Donald Trump, the federal government. You know, it'll be Donald Trump. And so, yeah, I mean, I think we all have a bigger fight ahead of us.
Because I'm curious. I mean, actually, because the suit is in the courts. It's not
right.
In the federal government. So it's a it's a judge. And is it going to go before a jury or just a judge?
I think it's a jury. I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we've had a mixed bag with these jury trials, but
yeah, and I'm not sure, so I don't want to. Maybe you know more about it, Ella, than I do the specifics. Okay. But
well, if you're just tuning in, we're talking this morning about how youth can change the world, and particularly in the face of climate chaos. And my guests are Ella Schreiner, who's a freshman at Grant High School, and Jan Zuckerman, who helped start the Environmental Middle School and taught for many years at its successor, the Sunnyside Environmental School. I'd like to talk now for the rest of the show about what do we do in the face of what is about to happen with the federal government, and looking at this parade of people who are not only not only have really terrible views on how to change the world, they want to change it for, I think, against all the values that so many of us really have been like holding out and really working for. But beyond that, they're also, most of them, except for maybe Tillerson, totally incompetent. And I guess the most obvious one is Rick Perry, who has been named to head the agency he couldn't remember the name of when he was in a presidential debate, primary debate a few years ago. That is being the Department of Energy, which is kind of critical to what we're talking about now. What do you see as the next steps? Like when you go to school on January 22nd or 23rd, I guess it'll be, what do you expect to have happen in the classroom when you see that there's this, at least symbolically, I'm not sure how fast it's going to be, a face that really opposes so many things that you're working for?
Well, I'm sure there'll be lots of conversations at Sunnyside happening, but we're at Grant now. I'm hoping that just the teachers will talk at all about it, and that youth will get inspired to take action, because I know a lot of people think that, like, there's nothing that one person can do, but that's totally wrong, that, like, every one person can make a big change. So I'm just hoping that people will realize that it's the time to act, and that people who already have realized that, like me, will be able to help others realize that.
Well, I heard an interesting thing from some friends last night, that the schools in Washington, D.C., which normally march in the Inauguration Day Parade, are not marching. Do you know anything about that?
I had heard about it. I don't know all the details, but yeah. I thought that was, I mean, that's an action.
That's right? A real action. Yeah,
yeah. And it's big. It's got a really strong message.
It's going to cut the inauguration parade by length by quite a bit, I think, too.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I think you find whatever you could fit into, you know, whatever action you can take, whether it's stopping something, it's divesting your money, it's getting out on the streets. I mean, there's so many folks that, at least in Portland, that are already active in the streets, and there's a lot of organizations that are starting to work, that are working together to try to move, to make a movement, right? To work jointly together to push forward. And I think students are a huge part of that. We saw that with a student walkout, mm-hmm. And then with the UCAN that's going to be happening. And I think that, you know, learning from Indigenous people, learning from our youth, I mean, we're going to need to be, there's a lot we can learn.
I really like what Jan said, too. I agree with that, which is that a lot of people, like, it's not as scary. It's not as big of a deal as it has to be, like, or you make it. Like, an action can make a big difference, even if it's just a small thing, that it doesn't, you don't have to change your whole entire life to just take an action. You can do it, fit it in, and still be making a change.
Another side that I think is the scariest is the tendency for certain news media and certain parts of government to kind of normalize this whole thing. And I really like what John Oliver said in his last show of the season, which is, this is not normal. Put that on your refrigerator. Remember, every single day, this is not normal. And how do we do that to keep people? I mean, what do you do in school, for example, to reinforce for all the students and for all the teachers? And I don't know if all teachers are going to agree with this, actually, because I'm sure that there are some Trump supporters among teachers somewhere in Oregon, not to mention around the country. But how do we realize this goal of making sure we all know that what's going on right now is not normal? This is not a democracy that we're facing.
Well, I think you keep asking the students, like, what they're seeing and what they want to see be different. So just keep in touch with the students and making sure that they're aware and what they see as a change that can happen.
Now, did you walk out? Were you part of the high school walkout after Trump was elected?
I wasn't.
So the walkout you were talking about, Jan, which one? Because there have been a number of walkouts.
Yeah, yeah. No, there were some students, though, from Sunnyside that, you know, that led the walkout from, is Annika from Cleveland? Or So I know that, you know, in different high schools it was planned. Right?
Franklin.
Actually, yeah. Okay. From Franklin High School. I mean, I think that, you know, right now, well, what's it called? Help?
Yeah, Help Portland.
Yeah, why don't you talk a little bit about that? Because that's a way of organizing students from all over.
Oh, well, it's a group of high school students coming together from high schools all over Portland to take climate action and just action in general, and to be like, see what other high schools are doing and be able to put all these things together to take one giant action.
And the nonprofit Create Plenty is supporting that and helping with that. And that's all part of the Portland Public Schools climate literacy resolution. It's a mandate from Portland Public Schools that we're teaching around the reality of climate.
Let's just talk a little bit about that, because that was actually the first time I heard you on KBOO. You were talking about that with Bill Resnick a few months ago, because it had just passed.
Right.
So what is this resolution, and how earth-shattering is it?
Yeah, well, there's been studies that have done, across the United States that shows that teachers don't know how to teach about climate change. They don't understand the science. They just don't. And same with in Portland. I mean, there's just not the curriculum out there. Well, there is some great curriculum.
It's paid for by Chevron, I think.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But basically, it's the resolution basically says that we can't have we've got to make sure that we've got curriculum that is science-based, factual curriculum that shows that people, humans, have an impact on climate change. And that it's taught in the classroom, and anything that denies that, negates that, is taken out. And then to bring forth, hear the stories of frontline folks that are dealing with climate change and really understanding what's going on, and hearing those stories, getting into the classroom, teaching in creative ways. There's a lot of teachers doing really good work around it in Portland. With this climate resolution, we're hoping to be able to bring those teachers together, spread that good curriculum, develop new curriculum, work with students on what they need, what they want, and have this all supported by Portland Public Schools,
And so that's going to happen no matter what.
It's going to happen no matter what. And, I think grassroots, and I think that local work and laws that are passed are going to, each state is going to have to do, cities, small towns, cities, states are going to have to be doing that to confront the, what's going to be happening in the White House.
Well, it's kind of an interesting thought, because I saw an article today, I think in the Times, about how, despite what is coming from the coming Trump administration mouthpieces, that this is completely contradictory for us coming from local and regional governments. And how does that interplay? What do you see that we can do here that can't be undone by a Trump administration?
Do you want to talk about that, Jan?
Well, I mean, one is the resolution, right? No new fossil fuel infrastructure. I hope that can't be undone. I don't know. You tell me, Barbara.
I don't think it can. I don't think that yet. I mean, I really shouldn't run some of my worst nightmares, because I ran them for a couple people and really bummed them out. So I have some concerns about how far the police state could go under Trump.
Right.
And we could get the fact that he can seem to get away without having to follow any protocols, and actually to be violating the law in several cases. And hopefully he's going to be called on that. And hopefully some of the people who are saying that as soon as he speaks the oath of office, he'll be in violation of the Constitution.
I know. I mean, we have to hope.
So, I mean, but, I think that's another thing we have to push as well. But I think that short of there being martial law declared in the first 6 months of his administration, I don't think that the federal government doesn't have control over local land use laws and zoning.
Right.
And that was what's really brilliant about the fossil fuel ordinance, that it's using existing land use laws, local land use laws, to prevent something on an international scale from happening.
Right.
Also, I think if we are able to pass an ordinance for a climate recovery in Portland, hopefully that won't be able to be undone, and Portland can start taking the necessary steps.
Now, the ordinance for the climate recovery, is that part of our Children's Trust?
That's what UCAN is hoping to.
So is that just for Portland, though, or is that for the federal government?
Well, for the UCAN group that I'm hoping to be part of, or that we're starting, is that would be just for Portland. But if the lawsuit is successful, the 21 youth plaintiffs, and then it will be a national.
I see this funny irony, like where we're going to be really working on states' rights for the next for a while.
And isn't that what they wanted?
Yeah, right. Yeah, yes, that's right. And so it all depends, like, who's in control in the government, but that's what got us through. I mean, in terms of hopefulness, I went through thinking about in my lifetime how many really right-wing Republican administrations I've lived through and how we got through them, whether it was through Reagan or through George W. Bush. And a lot of it was having really strong local laws mm-hmm. that would protect what we were doing. And I think that we had a conversation with a bunch of friends back in September, and one of my friends said, well, what are we going to do if Trump is elected president? And of course, everybody was like, it won't happen. We're not going to think about it. But the first thing that came to my mind is we're going to really continue to struggle locally, and we're going to work on all the things that we're working on. So what are those things?
What are the few little things?
Well, I think it's more than a few little. I mean, I think it's a lot of things. Actually, from Ella, what's in your mind right now about what do you want to see happen in the next few months and next year?
Well, I want to see some, like, the new political leaders in Portland taking action. So Ted Wheeler hopefully will do some good things. And then I'd also like to see more youth at showing up to hearings, because that just makes, like you said earlier, such a difference. And I think I'd just like to see more youth involved in general.
And we need more, maybe better representative city council. And also, we've got to do something about our police issue. I mean, it's bad. And our houselessness. I mean, there's some big issues that we need to address. But if we don't even feel safe with, we don't have a good relationship with our police, I think that's a huge issue that we need to work on. And there are incredible people working on that in the city. And I think all of us, those that are involved in the Climate Action Network, are working together with, I think, groups coming together and supporting each other and realizing that everything is connected is going to be a big part of it.
Well, I had this realization, I was looking at who Trump was appointing for the cabinet. And if you go to, I think it's ProPublica, has a wonderful diagram of his entire cabinet. And you click on the back and you see all their evil connections. But I thought this really is a unifying force for us, because it shows the connection between labor, mm-hmm. education, the environment, yep. energy, public works, housing. It's all there. Everybody's under attack together. So it's really time for us all to come together and work to support each other's struggles. And you're hearing that, I think, more and more. It's one of the first things that Bill McKibben said right after the election was, we need to work on supporting the communities that are the most vulnerable, which right now is the immigrants, and recognize that their struggle is our struggle.
Right. That's a big thing. And I think there's going to be lots of trainings and skill shops and folks working together to be prepared, figure out how everybody can connect or find their action, and we can all support each other and do some work.
Well, Bill Bigelow told me an inspiring story that he had heard on the radio where they're interviewing Standing Rock protesters. And so this young woman is being interviewed, and she's asked, how long have you been an activist? And she said, a week. And then the interviewer asked her, well, what were you doing before that? Well, I was a business major. And a week ago, I switched my major to politics and sustainability, or political science and sustainability, and I'm out here now.
Wow.
And I think that does indicate that the potential for change. I'm wondering, how about your friends, Ella? Anybody who was thinking about a life in business who's now going to be a political activist instead?
Definitely. Yeah, a lot of my friends are just now getting involved, and they're realizing that you can get really passionate about this and that there are so many things, topics that you can tackle or different actions. Like, one of my friends is like a really big feminist, and she's just now realizing that climate change can play into that. And like you said, how we all need to come together to fight the new attackers on us.
Actually, I forgot the women's issues. That's another part, and abortion rights and stuff like that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Donald Trump has brought it all right up to the, it's on the surface. It's just right in our faces. And I think he, in some ways, he could be the catalyst, he doesn't know what he's, what's going to be coming.
When he's unleashed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he also might have saved the newspaper industry, I was reading today. Because all the subscribers to all these online papers is going up as they're attacked.
Yeah.
Well, we're just about out of time, so I want to thank you very much for joining us. And I want to continue this conversation. I think I'd like to keep having the voices of youth on the show as well, so you can probably help plug me in that way, Ella.
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
And thanks for the work that you're doing, Barbara, because, I mean, you are taking action with your radio show.
Well, thank you.
And everything that you do.
Well, thanks a lot. And we've been talking this morning with Ella Schreiner, who is a student activist at Grand High School, and Jan Zuckerman, a longtime educator and activist. And you might see her tent pitched out in front of someplace or other, protesting some
injustice.
You'll
be with me, Barbara.
I'll be with you.
Okay. And Ella, for sure.
That's for sure. And thanks a whole lot for being here. You've been listening to Lux's Focus here on Cable Community Radio. And if you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear this show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locusfocus. Next week, we'll talk with Ben Schreiber, Climate and Energy Program Director for Friends of the Earth, about Trump's cabinet nominations and how they bode for the environment and the world. My engineer is Terrell Lowry. I'm Barbara Bernstein. We're going to go out with some music by Sweet Honey and the Rock. Thanks for listening.
I'm not your children. They are the sons and the daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but they are not from you. And though they are with you, they belong not to you. You can give them your love, but not your thoughts. They have their own thoughts. They have their own thoughts. You can house their bodies, but not their souls. For their souls dwell in a place of tomorrow, which you cannot visit, not even in your dreams. You can strive to be like them, but you cannot make them just like you. Strive to be like them, but you cannot make them just like you. Your children are not your children. They are the sons and the daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but they are not from you. And though they are with you, they belong not to you. You can give them your love, but not your thoughts. They have their own thoughts. They have their own thoughts. You can house their bodies, but not their souls. For their souls dwell in a place of tomorrow, which you cannot visit, not even in your dreams. You can strive to be like them, but you cannot make them just like you. Strive to be like them, but you cannot make them just like you.